Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
From books and movies to even old stories, many people think they have an idea of what being a soldier is like. But every soldier has a unique story.
We were pinned down, we couldn't move. We thought, this is it. We were going to die. So I said a prayer.
One of them is Newton Ard's man, Graham Eve. He boasts a military career which spanned over 8,000 miles.
And in battle, it's not as you see in TV and, you know, the films. If your friends get killed, that's your friend.
His start with the Parachute Regiment in Northern Ireland was a baptism of fire. In his first tour, his unit lost 20 men, 16 of them in the Warren Point ambush.
From early this morning, about 100 RUC men have been carrying out the gruesome task of picking up the pieces after last night's carnage. Six of the soldiers died in the first explosion. The second explosion followed about 20 minutes later. 12 soldiers died in this blast.
I knew all the lads that were killed. I was flown in as one of the patrols first on scene after the explosion, and it was bloody.
Graham's service carried him to the Falkland Islands, where scenes got even bloodier.
We stood up in our trenches and we saw the sailors jumping into the water and the screams. And the next thing, there was a massive, massive explosion. An antelope just blew up. These poor lads were getting killed and jumping into the freezing cold water.
255 British servicemen died, alongside 655 Argentinians, along with three Native Islanders.
This was the last conventional war that the British armies ever fought. And I don't think there'll be a war like that again.
In this episode of The Bell Tell, I'll be sitting down with the former paratrooper and gun team commander to hear his fascinating story. Graham, you're originally from Newton Ards, but you served in the British Army in the late 70s in Northern Ireland before serving in the Falklands War in 1982.
We did a two-year tour before the Falklands. It was a very eventful tour. To para my battalion, we lost during that tour 20 lads. Out of those 20 lads that were killed during that tour, I had an involvement or indirect involvement in their deaths. I knew all the lads that were killed, the 16 paratroopers with two jock lads killed. I knew personally the 16 lads that were blown to pieces at Warren Point. I was flown in as one of the patrols first on scene after the explosion. It was bloody. And I was 18 years of age, as were a lot of the lads. We were very young. The lads that had been killed were, a lot of them were the friends of mine that we'd gone through depot with.
Six of the soldiers died in the first explosion, when a bomb in a lorry loaded with straw was detonated by remote control as they drove past. The second explosion followed about 20 minutes later. This time, the bomb had been hidden in a gate lodge opposite Narrowwater Castle, a couple of hundred yards down the road. 12 soldiers died in this blast, and some of the bodies were thrown into Carlingford Lock. Among the casualties were reinforcements sent in after the first explosion.
Now, that was a good day for the IRA. I do know that in the prisons they were celebrating, and why wouldn't they? So I was saying, when the 16 lads were killed at Warren Point, that blooded us, and we realised the reality of the job we were doing and the situations we could get ourselves into.
Last night's death toll was the worst suffered by the British Army in any single incident in the 10 years they've been here. The 18 deaths make yesterday the worst single day of violence in the North since the present wave of troubles began.
I was also involved in an ambush where it was 0020 in the morning, 1st of January, 1980. We were in ambush on what we refer to as Hotel 21 Alpha, I believe, on the border. And we had a young lieutenant, Simon Bates, not just out of the factory, as we would say, to Sandhurst. And I'm glad to say when I tell this story, I wasn't involved in the killing group, so I never fired a round. But what happened was the ambush was set, and the officer and another young lad, who we, Jerry Hardy, we had celebrated his birthday. It was his 18th birthday on the 31st December. So they were in what we call the cut-off, which is off from the main killer group. And it was a very, very cool night. He had a balaclava on, and he had Welton boots on, and he took off his webbing, and he took the young lad, young Hardy, with him. Now, this is something, once an ambush is set, you don't leave it. But he was cold, so he wanted to go for a walk to warm up. We didn't know, and he came in through the rear of the ambush. So it was pitch black, and the lads turned round, and all they could see for their night sights was this figure with a balaclava, Welton boots, and a rifle. So they opened fire, and that was, the two lads were killed. Inquiry was done, and it was stated it was professionally well laid out ambush, and it was just unfortunate it was the inexperience of the officer at the time. So that's the 16 lads Warren Point. The two lads there, Bates and Hardy, and the other one that had involvement was Sergeant Brian Brown. I'd had a car accident in Ballykillner and fractured my ankle. I'd just come out of plaster, so we'd been flown from Ballykillner to Fort Kill for a few weeks. And due to the fact that plaster had just come off, I did my time in what was called Foxfield OP, up on the hill overlooking Fort Kill. Now, during that period of time, I knew everything about Fort Kill, and every little niche or every hiding place, we knew where it was. But we also observed what was called Hotel 18, which was the border crossing. And this day, using our sights, I saw somebody coming from across the border down to the border point to a gate in a field. And I can picture this as clear today because I always refer to him as Super Mario. He had long black hair, black moustache, blue overalls, and he was jumping over backwards and forwards over this gate. So I thought, this guy's priming an improvised explosive device. So I called my oppo up, who he said we've got to open fire, and to which I had agreed, and we asked permission from Fort Kill to open fire. And the operations officer said, no, just keep observing. So we asked for the Phillies patrol to be sent down. When, during those times, there was always a four-man patrol in the village, patrolling 24 hours a day. He says, no, just keep observing. Then he went away and disappeared. That afternoon, myself, those of us that were in the OP, we were flown back down into Fort Kill, and our reliefs for the next few days were flown up. That was the 8th of August. On the 9th of August, Bram Brown was out in patrol, and he went down that way, and the bomb was set off, and Bram Brown was killed instantly. So what I think galls me to this day is I was never asked for an interview. And remember, we identified this man clearly, knew what he was doing, but we were ignored, and a good man lost his life.
You then fought in the Falklands War. 255 British forces lost their lives along with 655 Argentinian servicemen. Did you know before you were asked to go to the Falklands, did you have a general idea that you were going to be sent over?
I would just come back of my honeymoon, and we were in Northern Ireland, and we heard that the Falklands had been invaded.
Mr. Speaker, sir, the House meets this Saturday to respond to a situation of great gravity. We are here because for the first time for many years, British sovereign territory has been invaded by a foreign power. After several days of rising tension in our relations with Argentina, that country's armed forces attacked the Falkland Islands yesterday and established military control of the islands.
Remember the parachute regiment, the 2nd Battalion Parachute? We knew if Margaret Thatcher was going to do anything, send anybody down, it would be us. And then, a few days later, I got a telegram And all it says in the telegram is Bruneville, nothing else. Now, excited? Yeah. Frightened? Yes. If any soldier tells you they weren't frightened, they're lying, but it's what we wanted to do. So I went straight back to Aldershot. My wife followed me, and it was there just very quickly prepare ourselves as quick as possible to get ready to go to war. And we all headed down to the Norland.
The ministry has declined to reveal what equipment will be loaded with the paratroopers, but they'll probably be bringing some of the Army's most up-to-date field artillery. Meanwhile, work is continuing to strengthen her decks to allow helicopters to land, and sophisticated radio communications equipment is also being installed.
Now, the Norland was a North Sea ferry. It used to go from Hull to Rotterdam. To go over the Atlantic Ocean for a flat-bottom boat. Let's just say I've never had the urge since that day to go on a cruise. That was a rough journey down.
This was an 8,000-mile journey. Did you know what to expect? What was the general feeling?
Did we know what the... We were getting intelligence briefings and geographical picture of the islands and what to expect. And it was a winter time down there. It was rough the whole way down. As we got closer, things started to get a wee bit more intense. So we got into the landing craft, early hours in the morning, miserable, absolutely south of the Falkland Islands. The weather is terrible. We were in the landing craft, and the marine pilot, I believe they call him, he was taking our company ashore. He didn't get us onto the shore, but he dropped us into the freezing cold Atlantic water in the early hours of the morning. Each man had 120 pound of equipment on his back. He had his webbing, which would be 30, 40 pound. Then you have your weapon. So you're stepping into freezing cold Atlantic water with all this equipment on. You get onto the shore, it's miserable, it's raining, you're freezing cold. There's no footpaths or roadways. It's all elephant grass and rough and rocks. We got into our company line. The SAS, SBS, they were there to meet us, pointed in the direction we had to go. Now, our mortar platoon, you have the mortar rounds, which are quite heavy. So we had to help them with their rounds. So you picture the equipment we already had, and then we had to take two mortar rounds each. So we picked them up and we carried them as well. And we went up onto the hills around San Carlos, over elephant grass. It was a few mile, pitch black. It was miserable. We had to keep stopping, and every time you stopped, you sat down for a minute. You couldn't get up yourself. Your mate next to you had to pull you up. And remembering our feet were soaking. And that was it. Our feet were never dry again for the full time we were on those islands. When we got up onto our position of San Carlos, we dug in as much as we could. That was a rocky surface, but we each had our own positions. But a Pucara, which was a single engine ground attack aircraft, was shot down by the SAS. So my section's first job was to see if we could find the aircraft and see whether the pilot was in it or if we could find him. So we went down, and it was quite some distance. We found the aircraft eventually, but the pilot wasn't in it. He had escaped. On the way back, heading up on the hill again, there was an attack on the ships in San Carlos Bay. And as the Argentine aircraft had done their bit, they then came streaming down the valley towards us. We thought, hang on, they see us. But we opened fire on them. They were going that fast, we were that close, they couldn't open fire on us, thankfully. But we opened fire on them. We didn't hit them. It was just kind of instantaneous, you know, this is what we had to do. We then got back up on the hill, and my OC says, Corporal Eve, you seen your trench? And he had this big grin on his face and a smile. And he said, while we had been down there, our own artillery had been practicing their air bursts, and one of them had accidentally gone off above our trench, and our trench was covered in shrapnel. So if we had been up in our trench on the hill, there's a possibility I wouldn't be sitting here now.
So you're in the southern Atlantic. It's completely miserable. Do you think that came as a disadvantage to the Argentinian soldiers? And do you have any standout memories of them first few weeks fighting in that extreme weather?
The winds, you have gale force winds coming, it would change direction, and the sleet and the rain, you'd snow. It was crazy. But there was one night, the early hours, the Argentines attacked and this HMS Antelope got hit in the bay, which was quite a good distance from us. We stood up in our trenches and we saw the sailors jumping into the water and the screams. And the next thing, there was a massive, massive explosion. An Antelope just blew up. And to us, that was wonderful because the heat from that explosion just was, you know, wow. Yet these poor lads were getting killed and jumping into the freezing cold water. I mean, you knew how cold that weather was. But out of their misery, we got a bit of luxury. And that's war.
The Battle of Goose Green is one of the most well-known battles of the Falklands. Although the British forces had 690 people on the scene compared to over 1,000 Argentinians, over 40 Argentinian servicemen were killed and 961 were captured. 18 British soldiers were killed. Graham, you were there. What was it like to be in a battle like that, 8,000 miles from home?
The Argentinians, they had been there for some time, so they're well dug into pretty strongly defended trenches. We got up during darkness and the advance was given. And just in a big battalion line, we just stood up, started walking. Over to my left flank, 6 platoon was, and one of the lads fired the first shots with his GPMG. It was a heavy machine gun from the hip. So that was the start. Well, we cleared those forward trenches and then we moved on. And we got pinned down. The whole battalion got pinned down by sniper fire. And then my platoon, 4 platoon, we ended up in a big dip in the ground. I was an SAF gun team commander, which meant I had a GPMG on the mounted, and what's called a tripod. So I went up onto the top of the ridge. I was putting down machine gun fire onto the Argentinian positions, which were some distance away, but because I had the machine gun sustained firing, I was able to put quite accurate fire with my section onto the Argentinian positions. Then, next thing was, this round lands about 2 feet in front of my head, strikes the ground, and I just thought, shit, somebody's had me in their sights, and the round struck the ground in front of me. But we were down there for some time, and during that, our 5 platoon were further off to the left. Private Illingsworth, he got sniped at, he got shot in the jugular, he died instantly. Also during that, we'd got the word that our commanding officer, Jones, had been killed.
We very much regret to announce that the commanding officer of the 2nd Battalion, the Parachute Regiment, Lieutenant Colonel H. Jones, was killed in the action to take Goose Green.
We got closest to Goose Green. We had the airfield to our left, which was there was a big fence all around, so that was, we couldn't go off to there. To our right flank was open ground, and to the front, down in the dead ground, was Goose Green. And the rest of my company, they were way behind us, and they were in Argentinian bunkers that had been taken. So we were laid in the ground, and the Argentinians were firing up at us. And they were trying to bring mortar fire down on us, but we were too close. So the fire was cut, the rounds were coming down behind us. So we couldn't go forward, we couldn't go back, and we couldn't go to the left because the airfield. So it was only to the right flank. Next thing, helicopters started landing to our right flank. Chinooks and other helicopters. And we thought, hang on, they're flying in Argentinian reinforcements. And we were lying on our bellies and we couldn't get up. So the word from our team commander was, get your bayonets out, lads, and dig in with your bayonets. So we're on our floors, digging into tractor in we could to try and get ourselves as much into the ground as possible. And as that happened, a Pucara flew over, to which our D company further over to the left shot it down. It came down and landed just metres in front of us. It didn't blow up, but it covered us all in aviation gas. And it's surreal when you think back. You know, this plane actually crashed just in front of us. We were pinned down, we couldn't move. And with the reinforcements, we thought, coming in, we thought, this is it. And I've told you, I'm not a religious man, but we were going to die. So I said a prayer, because I thought, if there is anything there, I'm going to know in a minute. And this is the adrenaline, I can't explain it. We then accepted, we're dead, we're dying. And what goes through your head then is, how do you want to die? Do you want to get blown up? Get it over with instant? Do you want to be shot and maybe land in a freezing cold? So I want to be blown up. Then it got dark. And as it got dark, the firing stopped. And we were lying there. We just looked, hang on, has somebody turned the switch? It just stopped. And our OC behind us, over the radio, lads, get back here quick. We got up, we got back, and the Argentine surrendered.
Was this a conventional war?
This was the last conventional war that the British armies ever fought. And I don't think there'll be a war like that again. This was a war where you relied on naval fire, artillery fire, aircraft, Sea Harriers. The weather conditions down there, before Goose Green, we were supposed to have support from Sea Harriers and they couldn't fly. Then the artillery, they had problems with their guns. The Navy, they had problems with theirs. So all that firepower that we were supposed to rely on before we, as the ground troops, go forward, you couldn't rely on it. It didn't always work. So it was just basically the grunt on the ground getting on with the job.
Were you confident that the British Army were going to win?
No. It was amazing that we did win it, because it was hell on earth. And that's where the power of adrenaline. Adrenaline is one of the most powerful drugs the human body can experience. And what it takes you through is phenomenal.
The war only lasted 74 days.
Yeah.
Did you think it was going to last that? Was it going to be that short, or was it a surprise?
It couldn't be anymore. The lads would have dropped like flies, you know, between trench foot and one thing or another and exhaustion. It had to be fought quickly. So it was a quick war.
After the war ended in 1983, Falkland Islanders were given British citizenship. In 2013, the islands voted to remain a British overseas territory. Have you been back since?
I went back in 2002 for the 20th anniversary. I was down there for 7 days. They've built a place down there called Liberty Lodge in Port Stanley now, where we can go down and stay, and we get what's called indulgence flights, cheap flights down there if we want to go down. And I'm on social media talking to islanders, and you know, I was recently at a talk there at Queen's University last year. I was invited. They were the members of the Falkland Islands government were there. They never forget you, and they're the salt. They're much like people from Northern Ireland, North and South.
Graeme Eve, thank you very much.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.